Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's a Friday edition here, kicking off the long weekend. So, you know, at the end of the show, I'll have a little bit of a safety brief for all my little baby girls out there. But before that, we have five rounds in the magazine today, my friends. Five rounds. Round number one. One of the backbones of American life, our little down-home town hall meetings, where citizens have a say. And in Lincoln, Nebraska, one man has gone viral for taking a stand on an issue that affects us all. And there's no bones about it, my friends. Round number two, a second lieutenant that had millions of TikTok followers, but only four brain cells, decided to post a Holocaust joke this week. Didn't go over very well. In fact, Khan's got so riled up that he used a term other than kick rocks, and I'll give you a hint. Whoa. It starts with fuck. Round number three, Article 15's forfeiture of pay and reduction in ranks. Oh my, leadership at Fort Benning is going to come down hard if you're not in Georgia. Any quar, little quarantine.
Kate loves to do jokes. We're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in Georgia any quar.
Yeah, that would have been a nice heads up before I actually read it that we were doing a little Wizard of Oz goofing.
That just looked like a ridiculous typo, if we're being honest, because that was a stretch.
I knew I was going to get yelled at for that.
It looks like a Barstool comment section that somebody did on an Android phone. Round number four, Kate interviews Marine Corps veteran and author Dr. Wesley Gray about his upcoming March for the Fallen and advice for folks getting out of the military looking for their dream jobs. And he has one. He seems to be doing pretty well for himself. And finally, round number five, we've got two incredibly powerful Medal of Honor updates to close out the show. One freed 70 hostages set to be executed by ISIS, and the other returned repeatedly to a burning vehicle, fuel-soaked clothing to save his own fellow soldiers. You're going to want to run through a wall after we close out the show today. And all that's going to be brought to you by our good friends at Roman. If you want your penis to run through a wall of your boxers, you might want to swipe on a little Roman swipe before you get going on this long weekend. You come inside, you've done mowed, you've done dud everything on the honey-do list, and now she's like, honey, do these cheeks. And you're like, okay, but I'm exhausted. I need a little bit of Roman swipes to get me going. Roman swipes will be here fast, just like you used to be fast, but not anymore, my friends. Romans can ship you swipes directly and discreetly to your door in an unmarked package, and each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your wallet or wherever you need it, in your pocketbook, whatever. They're super easy to use. Just take that swipe out of the packet, swipe it on your little member, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. Go to GetRoman.com/zero. You can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/zero. Let's get started with the show. Here we go.
Can I tell you a daydream that I just had based off the ad?
Kate, because we had a talk. You wanted me to clean up the top of the show, and you're already being Katie Caveat.
I know, but this will be super quick. You said run through a brick wall, and then you got into that ad.
Uh-huh.
You paint the tip of your penis, not you, but somebody.
Right.
Like the Kool-Aid man, okay?
Mm.
And then you put on boxer shorts that have the slit in them. You put on boxer shorts that look like a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come up to your partner, you're like, oh, yeah. And then.
No, yeah, that'll really play. Let's get on with the show. Here's the theme music. Talk about today really took the internet by storm, and I was kind of surprised. This debate, to me, the chicken wings debate, is the same thing as is a hot dog a sandwich. It's been done a million times, and really, if you have a brain cell in your head at all, you know that a boneless chicken wing is not a chicken wing. One of the words in it is chicken wing. You don't have wings without bones. That does not exist. So there's a fellow that went to in Lincoln, Nebraska. He was tired of it. He had long auburn hair that's absolutely beautiful. He went and spoke to his city council. Here's what he had to say.
I promise I won't take up too much of your time here. My name is Andrew Christensen. I live at 1212 Twin Ridge Road. Lincoln has the opportunity to be a social leader in this country. We have been casually ignoring a problem that has gotten so out of control that our children are throwing around names and words without even understanding their true meaning and treating things as though they're normal. I go into nice family restaurants and I see people throwing this name around and pretending as though everything is just fine. I'm talking about boneless chicken wings. I propose that we as a city remove the... I propose that we as a city remove the name boneless wings from our menus and from our hearts. These are our reasons why. Number one, nothing about boneless chicken wings actually come from the wing of a chicken. We would be disgusted if a butcher was mislabeling their cuts of meats, but then we go around and pretending as though the breast of the chicken is its wing. Number two, boneless chicken wings are just chicken tenders, which are already boneless. I don't go to order boneless tacos. I don't go and order boneless club sandwiches. I don't ask for boneless auto repair. It's just what's expected. And then number three, we need to raise our children better. Our children are raised being afraid of having bones attached to their meat. That's where meat comes from. It grows on bones. We need to teach them that the wing of a chicken is from a chicken and it's delicious. I propose that we rename boneless wings in the city of Lincoln. We can call them buffalo-style chicken tenders. We can call them wet tenders. We can call them saucy nugs or trash. We can take these steps and show the country that where we stand and that we understand that we've been living a lie for far too long. And we know it because we feel it in our bones.
Thank you.
Now, Kate, you looked pretty fired up when I said that boneless wings aren't wings.
That boneless wings aren't wings. And first of all, I feel like city council meetings are so tedious and so boring and such a snooze fest, and more people should be involved in them. And so anybody who can razzle dazzle a city council town hall meeting has my vote. And for somebody to bring attention to the Lincoln, Nebraska city council, I bet they're beaming right now.
You know who the best in the biz that is? No free ads, but Chad Goes Deep. Those fellas are unbelievable.
Right. Yeah, they make it a little bit more fun. Christensen, the man who you just heard there, he goes by Handsome121Duck on Twitter, and he describes himself as a husband, chemical engineer, and storyteller, and he seems very pleased at the attention. He also recently tweeted, "A storm is brewing. The Lincoln City Council has yet to make a public statement, but they can see the writing on the wall." Mm-hmm. And it turns out Roy Christensen, Anders' father, the man you heard speaking there was Anders Christensen, is actually on the city council. So he was sitting there when his son came rolling in to talk about it.
That's embarrassing.
I'm sorry.
He says the city council will take the issue under advisement. He had no idea that Ander was going to show up or what he was going to say. So this is a surprise to his father as well. Coming in to spice up the meeting a little bit like a boneless chicken wing. Boneless wings, for anybody who is in the military especially, what's the one place you went, the most comforting place, the most comforting food? The off-base Hooters and their boneless hot wings. They had a special night where they were discounted. That was my happy place. Boneless wings dunked in the ranch sauce. Hooters abounding. I don't see what everyone's problem is with calling them that.
Because they're not wings. Yeah. It's a chicken tender. It's not a wing.
Listen,
without a bone, there is no wing.
If I cut my T-bone steak off the T-bone, it's still a T-bone steak.
No, it's not. If you bring a T-bone steak out to a plate and there's no bone, that's just a steak.
But certain things.
Hence why they say on the menu, bone in ribeye, right? Or bone in T-bone. And remember, I can get a great look at a T-bone steak by sticking my head up a bull, but I'd rather take the butcher's word for
it. Exactly right, Con.
His suggestions, buffalo-style chicken tenders, are different than boneless wings. They're different. Boneless wings are more of a ball, a bite, a little nug. And so
buffalo chicken balls. I'm down with that.
You just said it. It's a nug.
Okay, saucy nugget. His one suggestion of saucy nugs is the only thing I'll accept. But wet tenders, no. Get it the hell out of my face. Or trash? Who is this guy?
I like that one. That's my personal favorite.
Fuck you, Anders. Get out of here. But that was very upsetting to me. But names get people riled up. It got me thinking about other common food names that we have. Did you know three extremely common ones we only have because of the military? And the first one, you would never guess, because I feel like there's been a rallying cry against it. We call them, calling them freedom fries. Mm. French fries. French fries are actually called as such because of the military. The first French fries came from Belgium, where fishermen near the River Meuse began frying potatoes during long winter months when there wasn't enough fish.
Well, American soldiers first learned about the dish during World War I by way of French-speaking Belgian soldiers, which is why American dubbed them French fries. Today, you can visit the French Fry Museum in Belgium devoted to the sole history of the French fry. But yes, it was our own troops who named them
French
fries.
We fucked that up. That one's on us. I love the name Frites much better than French fries.
Oh, yeah. Right. Frites is so much classier.
Frites puts ass. If you're like, hey, do you want some French fries? I'm like, I already had a burger. Nah. Somebody says, you want frites? You ask me if I want frites? Buddy, yes, I want frites.
Especially
Sign me up for seconds.
Palms frites, whatever the hell that is, I'll take it.
Mm.
Can you imagine what it would taste like as an adult, though? Because I think we all probably had French fries for the first time when we were little, so we can't really remember that feeling of that first time. But can you remember, or can you imagine if you had a French fry for the first time as an adult, what a great memory that would be?
I'm not sure you'd like it as much. I think it's because it's that comfort food that you're really into it. Like when I think, because now whenever I try something new, it's going to be more fancy. I think that it has to be a little bit more fancy. I've had everything on the menu, essentially. Now, if I try something new, it better be really fancy. I would think that French fries, if I'm at this stage of my life, I'd be like, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you this. In college, I remember my first cheesy bacon ranch fries. I remember that. I had a friend. I was feeding them to my friend after a night at the bars. I have a permanent scar on my finger from where she bit me. Anyways, up next, the Salisbury steak. I'm sorry.
What was that called?
The Salisbury steak.
No.
What?
No.
Oh, get the hell. What am I? A Salisbury steak?
No,
what
it's is it? Way more white trash than that. It's just simple Salisbury steak.
Sorry. I'm not grossing you guys. Salisbury. Okay, fancy.
Salisbury.
Okay, yes. Well, I must have had my loafers on for that, Connor.
Do you remember all those Salisbury steaks commercials that used to come on TV that had it was like came in a green package? And it was through like, it's Salisbury steak. It's in the freezer aisle. And I thought, steak in the freezer aisle for a low, low cost of $5.99? Mom, that's a fucking bargain. What a bargain. Now I know it's just basically ground up meat shoved into a patty.
Well, here's the reason. The reason that we have Salisbury steak is the Civil War and diarrhea, chaps.
Yes.
So the Salisbury steak got its name from Dr. James Henry Salisbury, a 19th century doctor who first served it to Civil War soldiers during a study. He used the dish, which is basically just ground beef shaped like a steak with potatoes and gravy, to treat chronic diarrhea among Union soldiers.
That's a mistake. He's a phony doctor. He's like Dr. Quinn putting leeches on your neck.
3 decades after the war's end, Salisbury published a book in which he claimed that lean beef minced to break down any connective tissue and fully cooked was the best and most easily digested food. So in his defense, he felt like he was helping soldiers digest it before they even ate it by grinding it up for them, but still giving them the morale of feeling like they had a steak.
Anyone could have been a doctor in the 1860s. You just make up some shit and they have no scientific way of backing it up. You're like, oh, this will cure that. Oh, cool. Here's some whiskey. That'll cure your toothache. Well, yeah, for a little while.
Diarrhea pants. I thought you'd have more sympathy for.
No, that's what I thought you were going to say. It's easier if you say, because if you couldn't swallow or if you got injured and you couldn't really move your mouth that much, Salisbury steak is a way around people who have swallowing issues.
Well, I'm sure it was for them too.
Yeah.
Cons, have you ever eaten?
No, yeah, I've had Salisbury steak. I mean, not often just because it's not that great.
When I'm trying to relate to the enlisted, I walk around with a Salisbury steak in my mouth.
Mother, you won't believe what I had with the paws down at camp.
Yes. The other one.
You're eating something called a Salisbury steak.
Eating Salisbury's with the Commodores. Nachos. Nachos first came on the scene.
We did nachos? That's a huge one.
That's the U.S.
That's a big win
and
for
I'll
us.
Tell you, it's a big win for military spouses. They're the ones who gave us nachos. Nachos first came on the scene in 1943 in a small city called Piedras Negras, Mexico, just south of the U.S. military base in Fort Duncan, Texas. Time magazine reports that a group of military wives had come down to the town for a shopping trip, found all the restaurants were closed, and when they headed to one spot in town called Victory Club, the maitre d' named Ignacio Nacho Anaya took pity on the women. He offered to make them something quick out of the ingredients he had on hand in his closed kitchen. When he saw how much the women enjoyed the dish, he added it to the menu on his own nickname, Nacho. So he created a series of stuff. Yeah, so military spouses are the reason we have nachos, everybody.
You want some of this? It's the best.
Hell yes. So, you know, maybe.
All right, quickly. Beef or chicken nachos?
Beef.
Chicken.
I'm going chicken too.
I wonder if that guy was pro troop or anti troop, because I would like Nacho, the dude who invented nachos, to be like, I hate all the troops in the whole world. Say it to my face.
What's that from?
Nacho Libre. How do you not know?
Nacho Libre.
Oh, I've never seen it.
What? Well, you would love that movie.
I'll tell you what, as we've learned this week, I don't think Kate has seen many movies at all.
I know. I got to get cracking on it.
Well, that's probably why UHF is our favorite.
To any troops out there, you know, the troops have given us nachos, Salisbury steak, french fries. If you have a better name for boneless wings, please let us know. But I will not be accepting trash.
I also want to give a special shout out to something that I've adopted, and it's from our good friends in the Navy. I will never call a cordon bleu anything other than a hamster from this point forward for the remainder of my life. My entire family has adopted it since we found that out recently. It was probably like 2 months ago. We've had maybe weekly, at least bi-weekly hamster night.
Oh yeah, it's my favorite term. I'd say that's my favorite term for food. It's adorable. Who doesn't want a hamster?
Super cute. Thanks, Kate, for bringing
Who
that.
Who doesn't want to just eat a hamster?
Yeah,
why not?
Right?
Love it. All right, let's go on to round number two. Round number two is not going to be about Salisbury steak, but it's going to be about another second lieutenant who ended up cooked anyway. Am I right, Kate? Everybody loves a good old-fashioned transition. This second lieutenant popped up on social media courtesy of Task and Purpose and multiple other news sources that cover military news. Paul Soldier, who's been a guest on the show, and he's the editor-in-chief of Task and Purpose, he sent out a tweet that said, Second Lieutenant Nathan Freienhofer, I think that's how it would be, right? Did I know that?
Freienhofer, a popular
TikTok influence with nearly 3 million followers, posted a joke about the Holocaust. He said, if you get offended, get the fuck out of here because it's a joke. He went on to say a Clay Travisism and said, don't be a pussy about it. He made a Holocaust joke that you would make if you were like in the sixth grade.
Right. Let's listen to him now.
Reason 1 million why I will never be verified. Dark jokes. Aha! Listen to this one. Why? What's a Jewish person's favorite Pokemon character? Haha! Ash. And if you get offended, get the fuck out because it's a joke. Don't be a pussy!
What a piece of shit. And Paul said that he learned about the TikTok from a fellow officer who said, my 97-year-old World War II veteran grandfather helped liberate Dachau and would even now knock this kid's teeth in with ease. Such an individual has no place within our military. The Army now says it's investigating, saying it's completely inconsistent with our values. Even the 18th Airborne Corps, where this guy was assigned, is looking into it. And it is, I think, the most startling part. And this guy at SSS Sanchez TV, Steven Sanchez, he said, these are the things I've seen from his supporters on TikTok. The Army should worry about Fort Hood, not this. It's just dark humor. If you don't like it, keep scrolling. I'm Jewish and wasn't offended. He said it was just a joke. And a petition with 6,000 signatures to allow him an honorable discharge is going around. So, Cons, what do you think about this young officer / idiot?
This is terrible on so many different levels. I saw one gentleman who tried to defend him saying he's just an immature 22-year-old and he should not have his life ruined because of this. Now, I agree, he shouldn't have his entire life ruined, but he should definitely be removed from the Army and not have anything resembling an honorable discharge, because he does not deserve that, and he does not deserve to wear the uniform anymore. I'm not buying this, hey, he's 22, he's immature. Guess what? When you put that rank on, it doesn't matter anymore. You have to be above the fray. And I get it. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and say when I was a 22-year-old lieutenant, I had the best judgment of all time. We all make mistakes. But that said, there are certain mistakes that you cannot come back from, because what this mistake or what this action tells me is that he is either A, devoid of judgment, or devoid of a moral compass, or both. Either way, that's not somebody you want leading soldiers in combat, because I've also seen reactions from enlisted soldiers and NCOs who have said, if this was my lieutenant, I would have zero respect for him, and there's no shot I would have any chance of listening to anything he had to say. So once you lose that respect of your soldiers, I don't know how you're going to lead them, much less in a combat environment. So it's just unbelievable, and I do not need to hear any excuses. The whole, oh, it's just a joke. It's not just a joke. And it's definitely not just a joke for people who lived through that horrific part of our world's history.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's unbelievable to me that people will even make an attempt to defend this guy.
And I think for me, from being a Marine, and we've talked about the difference between enlisted and officers in the Marine Corps and other branches. So whenever I was typically around an officer, it was pretty serious. And for me, just thinking about a military, quote, influencer who has 3 million followers who does it by goofing is weird to see an officer do that. To me, that's the same thing as being in, like, the third grade and seeing your teacher at the grocery store and she's wearing, like, short shorts or something. Like, you don't want to see that. You want to focus on your teacher as being your teacher. You want to focus as your young commander is your young commander, and he takes things seriously. And I'm not saying that they can't joke, but there's a certain decorum that you have to carry yourself with whenever you are an officer. Like, it's just part of the game. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that aspect of it's bullshit. And secondly, to the people who are defending this, there is no inherent right to be an officer in the Army. It doesn't exist. You don't have that inherent right just because you commissioned to keep that commission. It could be taken from you at any fucking time because you fucked up.
Right.
This kid fucked up, showing no remorse, still being on Twitter. His little fuck buddies are with him. Get them all out.
Yeah, and before he deleted his TikTok account, genuinely not funny. Just a total smarmy, like, appealed to, like, middle school kids. And if that's who your officer is appealing to,
have his little discharge and be on. He'll go to Outkick Your Coverage or whatever the fuck Clay Travis's platform is called, and he'll do, like, the super cheesy, we're going to be as racist as we possibly can, but just barely skirt the line version of ZBT.
And you know what's super embarrassing for the Army, and too, Auschwitz, the official account of the Auschwitz Memorial, had a response to this that got a huge reaction. He said, he wrote, for legal reasons, this is a joke. What about moral reasons and respect? Would he look into the eyes of survivors liberated by, and they tag the U.S. Army and tell them this? Nathan, if you see this, take their lesson to learn why you hurt real people and their memory, and a link to the stories of the people. And, like, for a soldier to publicly get called out by the Auschwitz Memorial, I mean, you're a fucking moron, dude.
And you know, it seems as though he might have been using, and I'm speculating, but he might have been using his uniform to gain clout on the TikTok platform, which, again, that's not okay. I'm not okay with that. And this is a weird world because none of us were really in the military when social media was as prevalent. So it's different now. But at the same time, to Chaps's point, you do not just get to keep that commission. You have to continue to set that standard. It doesn't just mean once you pin on that rank, you get to keep that rank forever. You have to continue to set the standard and be the example for everyone. And especially if you have 3 million followers, I don't know if there's anybody in all of the military who has that kind of following on any social media platform. So that's unbelievable to me as well. And I mean, the thing I would say to any officers, or really anyone in the military now who is on social media, you need to act as if every day your mom, your dad, your commander, they all get a report of everything you put out on social media. And would you be okay with that? And ask yourself, especially for leaders, just like I mentioned a few weeks ago, I had a mentor of mine used to say, Connor, ask yourself, if you saw one of your soldiers doing what you're about to do, what would you say to him?
Mm-hmm.
So right when you're about to post something, if you saw one of your soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen, about to post that, what would you say to them? And if you think, oh, that's not a big deal, well, then you need to look in the mirror because you have some judgment issues that you need to address real quick.
And there's really not that many areas that are out of bounds. Like, where the military is definitely a culture where dark humor and crude humor is a huge part of the day-to-day life. You can't go to the Holocaust. I mean, you just can't do that. You wouldn't do if you were giving a briefing, you would never do that. Just don't do it when you have 3 million followers. Simple as that. We all agree.
The only good thing that come out of this, I saw some officers tweeting, is that you know that everybody, just looking at this kid going off his vibe, you know so many people already who had to work with him hated him.
This guy.
So this finally gave them a reason. Because you know they say in the military, give me a reason. Come on, give me a reason.
He had enough reason to get in trouble with his sergeant major just based on his haircut alone. Disgusting.
Right. So that's if there's any silver lining, he outed himself as a loser and he's out. So
0-3 there, Lieutenant. How about that? Uh-huh. All right, Indeed. Let's move on to round number three. Round number three, we're going to do, we're going to shift a little bit because things are getting out of control at Fort Benning. And we had a little side discussion on ZBT's little group chat about this because this has to come down with a little bit of coronavirus goofing. Cons, why don't you tell us what's going on here?
Sorry, I was on a different part of the sheet, so I just had to scroll down. Sorry, hold on one second.
Waiting on you. My God.
All right, so here's what happened. Some Army officials at Fort Benning, Georgia, have gotten serious enforcing...
My God. Why don't you smack on a couple of crayons before this?
Keep it.
You got some Salisbury steak stuck in your mouth there, sir?
You got a marble full of mouth.
Got a marbles in your marble?
All right, sorry. All right, Army officials at Fort Benning, Georgia, have gotten serious about enforcing COVID-19 restrictions by handing down punishments under the UCMJ to more than 60 soldiers posting some of those actions on social media. The most recent violation of Benning's COVID-19 restrictions occurred a couple weeks ago when a second lieutenant received a reprimand for wrongfully traveling to Petersburg, Virginia, which is understandably outside the radius of where they're supposed to be traveling. The order lays out a series of restrictions ranging from standard COVID-19 guidelines such as wearing masks and observing social distancing to limiting personal travel. Restrictions dictate troops must stay within 150 miles of Benning but can get approved for travel up to 250 miles at the brigade command level. Benning began posting these UCMJ summaries of unnamed soldiers in late August. Major General Patrick Donahue assumed command of MCOE and Benning. More than 60 Benning soldiers have received UCMJ punishment.
And we know this guy. There's not very many major generals that if you're outside of the military, you don't know. If you're involved with Twitter on military level, you know who Pat Donahue is. He's very much out there. I would say he's a very, for lack of a better word, he's a very progressive general. Like he is involved with the troops. He wants to hear what they have to say. But we also know he's not fucking around either.
Right. He took over, basically, is what this is saying. And then shit started getting real with these punishments. So, yeah.
So he posted these punishments. And this is where kind of our discussion stemmed from. So he posted five soldiers found to have violated COVID-19 orders. On May 1st, a private first class received an Article 15 for wrongfully failing to obey curfew hours and was punished with reduction to E2, forfeiture of $971 in pay, 45 extra duty, and 45 days restriction.
Well, it wasn't just five. They found out that they did 60, and five have received the UCMJ. 60 violated it. He made an example of five so far.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm sorry. So the one I just mentioned, the reduction and the forfeiture were suspended, which means so long as he doesn't do something screwed up again, that won't actually happen.
So 45 days duty, 45 days restriction. The next one, this is my favorite one. A second lieutenant got a general officer memo of reprimand because he went to Auburn to drink. He went to Auburn, Alabama for a couple cold ones.
Well, War Eagle, what else can you do?
Yeah, I mean, now, War Damn Eagle.
What's important to note there was he got a general officer memo of reprimand. The difference being if it was a local letter of reprimand, it would just stay with his unit. And then once he went to a different unit, that memo wouldn't follow him. However, this memo is going to follow that guy the rest of the time he's in the Army, and that's going to be a problem.
But I feel like if he gets his next command, if his like next leader is a crusty sir or ma'am, they're like, all right, I hear you, man. Sick. Like, I'd go to Auburn for a cold one, too.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. All right. On June 13th, a staff sergeant received a field grade Article 15 for wrongfully traveling to a prohibited place and received a reduction in rank to E5, 45 days extra duty, and an oral reprimand.
See, that was a career killer. That's a done. Killer. Like, yes. Your career is done. That's what I don't like about these. It's completely bullshit.
I don't know.
Two more here, real quickly. On June 28th, a sergeant received a company-grade Article 15 for traveling off-post for non-essential activities and was punished with forfeiture of $674 in pay.
I hope it was something really stupid, like, I gotta go buy a pet snake, man. Like, I hope it was something real dumb. Sorry.
And finally, on August 3rd, a staff sergeant received a company-grade Article 15 for traveling outside the mileage radius and was punished with forfeiture of $879 in pay and 7 days extra duty. Your thoughts.
Real quick, what's an Article 15?
That's just...
It's kind of like
paperwork.
NJP falls under the category of Article 15. It's just like the punishment guidelines of whatever you do in the, like for the UCMJ. So there's different levels within the Article 15 of how you can punish somebody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Noted.
So, I mean... Some people are saying this is unfair and unbalanced, whereas I depends, I guess, you know,
Chaps,
who you are.
I'm shocked that Chaps thinks this is too harsh because I feel like you're the kind of guy where, like, you were given an order, you don't follow it.
Because of that. I'm saying this is just another example. Like, I think that there's times where there is an enlisted officer divide and it doesn't make sense. Like, where the officer clearly isn't going to be doing what you're doing. Like, you're not going to like, if an officer doesn't go out, for me, if I'm the staff NCO of a platoon and I have my guys out there, my Marines, my guys, my girls, whoever, and we're all out there and we're doing a police call and the sir is sitting on or the ma'am is sitting on the sideline, I don't give a fuck about that. There is definite differences in what you're supposed to do job-wise. However, I think this the officer enlisted divide is taken to another level in two different ways. One, accountability for actions, and two, the award system. It is bullshit. The award system, very much so, because you're supposed to be getting an award doing things outside your grade and experience level. That's the entire reason that you have that. You're doing things that a reasonable or prudent person wouldn't consider likely for somebody in your rank or experience to do. So whenever you have an E4 and an O2 that go out on the same mission, they do the same thing, basically. One gets a Bronze Star, the other one gets an RCOM or an AM or something like that, a lower level award, I think that's bullshit. The second lieutenant or the first lieutenant should be held to a higher responsibility, and it should be flip-flopped the other way around. And the same thing with punishments. You have this E6 who's already spent multiple years in, violates the same thing as an officer does, and gets a reduction in rank, which is guaranteed career killer. Guaranteed. If you get busted from E6 to E5, you will never see E8. Never.
Anyways.
Yeah, but I think the difference being, Chaps, I think you're underplaying how big of a deal a general officer memo of reprimand. If this guy had any aspiration of getting past 03, probably just won't happen. He could stick around for as long as he wants. He'll slowly move up the chain, maybe make 04, but even if he stays 20, he won't make 05.
Also, it could have been a woman who did this.
Could have been a woman. You're right. Sorry. It could have been a female.
If I was an officer, I probably would have hootered on out to Auburn for a whiskey.
So I know it doesn't seem as drastic in the immediate, but I think ultimately it is just as much of a career killer.
And it's not, even if you're a career killer, even if you do, even if that general officer level of reprimand does affect long-term career of what you're going to do, it is nowhere near the same thing. Like when you walk into a room as a staff sergeant and the next day you walk in as a sergeant, that is huge. Like for your entire career, it's not the same. You have to make that up over the next 4 years. This guy gets a letter of reprimand where he or she is not going to be a lieutenant colonel. He walks in the same day, the next day, still as the first lieutenant. He didn't get that reduction. The level of embarrassment it takes to go from a staff NCO back down to sergeant when you're in the same unit is unbelievably different.
My only advice is if you're an E3 or below, take that time to get demoted because nobody cares. You back then, and that's it.
I will say one of the things that they probably will do with these reductions in rank, because of the reason you just mentioned, Chaps, they'll get shipped to a different unit because they will lose a ton of respect.
The enlisted folks won't.
The reason you
no said. Way.
Yes, they will.
No.
Yes, they will.
Dude, I,
yes,
no
they will.
Tons
I've seen it
there.
Happen. I've seen it happen where they get
if they
away.
Do that, if the Army does that, that is a huge feather in their cap, and the Marines don't do that. Usually you get okay. busted down. Well, first of all, to be busted down as a Marine staff NCO takes a shit ton. It's not O-4, O-5 is not going to do it. Give me a colonel or somebody higher than that. You're not doing it any other way. So there is that difference as well.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway,
I guess you want to talk about
nobody gives a shit about.
Yes, they do. This is real military
okay,
talk.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about Salisbury steak for 10 minutes. This is
that's
actual military
shit.
Major General Donahue, though, I mean, this, you talk about setting an example. This is very much a harsh way, a harsh reality that these guys are learning that they should have been following the rules. But again, it goes back to the previous story that we're talking about. When you are in, and I'm not talking about the lower enlisted guys here, but these NCOs, these officers, you have to know better. And again,
just don't put it out on social media. That should be the fucking thing.
Before he gets kicked out. I think the punishment for if Donahue is listening and could bring Second Lieutenant Nathan Freehofer into his unit, have him put in the stockades, and then everybody else, all the other military TikTokers, get to come and do TikToks with him in an embarrassing manner.
I agree. That's a very good one. Another very good one is who we have in an interview. Dr. Wesley Gray, who seems like a super in shape fella, super motivator. Like whenever I've always said, you have a new commander, a new sergeant major, and they walk into the room and you can see their tricep outside of their uniform, you're like, fuck, man, here we go.
Uh-oh. He's going to be good.
You kind of want your next level of leadership to be just a little pudgy, so then you know that they're not going to be wanting to do PT at 06 every day. Like, you want that.
Yes. As soon as I talked to Dr. Gray, he... you ever meet somebody and right away, you know, there's those leaders who you kind of roll your eyes at, but then there's the leaders who you're like, if I was still in, this guy would get me to drink the Kool-Aid. And I know it, like, you know, and you're
that's
listening
how I think
to
Donahue
like,
is.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Gray definitely is the kind of leader and the kind of person that just gets people excited. I felt excited talking to him. His enthusiasm was contagious. And towards the end of the interview that we'll get into here, well, let's just hop into it now and then we'll follow up in a second here. Up next, we have Dr. Wesley Gray, Marine Corps veteran. Among many other things, Dr. Gray is a UPenn grad who took time off to serve our country and is author of Embedded, a Marine Corps advisor inside the Iraqi Army. He also achieved an MBA and PhD in finance from the University of Chicago and also co-authored the book, hear me out here, Quantitative Value, A Practitioner's Guide to Automating Intelligent Investment and Eliminating Behavioral Errors. And I'm only including this info for all the jerks who keep tagging me in the Marines Eat Crowns and can't read all that stuff. He is proving all of the haters wrong. These days, he's also helping gear up for the annual March for the Fallen taking place on September 26th at 8 a.m. across the country. And we're definitely going to get into that and how people can join in. But beforehand, let's jump into a little bit of your background. And thank you so much for joining us here.
Yeah, no, it's an honor to be here, and thanks for the invite.
Yeah, so I have to ask, it's not every day a U of Penn grad stops what they're doing, and this was back in 2004, I believe, and says, you know what, I'm going to take a break here and go to war. What? How did this all begin?
You know, it wasn't even because of the war. I grew up on a cattle ranch, and I'd always been to, like, adventures and, like, shooting guns and hunting and just doing cool stuff. So I always knew I wanted to be in the service anyways. And for me, it was just a matter of like timing. Right. So I got out of high school and I got into college. So I was like, well, I'll join the service later. And then I got out of college and then I got into this PhD program. So I was like, I'll do it later. And then, you know, at some point, you know, I was like, all right, I'm 24. I've been doing this finance crap and I'm actually tired of it after doing in the PhD program for a while. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, now or never. I just wanted to do my time, basically.
What was the reaction of family and friends when you decided to do that? Because again, it's not the typical path, I feel like, for most. Were people like, you're crazy or?
Yeah, it was mixed, right? Like my uncle, he's old Navy chief. He's like, hurrah, like, that's awesome. Go for it. And my mom obviously wanted to like punch me in the face. And then, you know, and I talked to a lot of like my colleagues and what have you in the PhD program. And they're like, God, you're kind of insane. So it was kind of a mixed bag, I would say. Some people thought it was a great idea. Other people thought it was terrible.
So. And what is it like to be a Marine Corps officer with a doctorate in finance, seeing what the PFCs are buying on the weekends? Was that a struggle for you?
You know, I'm not really a judgmental person. And, you know, I always say, like, my favorite hobby is manual labor. So I just like normal stuff. Cause I get, you know, you get so extreme geeking out and thinking too hard about life. Sometimes I actually enjoy like simple stuff, like dealing with PFCs and, you know, doing write-ups and like dealing with their bullshit. So, but I find that fine, you know, cleaning shedders, like I'm in. that's better than doing quant finance sometimes.
As someone who can't do math, I full-heartedly agree with you there. Yes, I'll fill a sandbag any day over long division personally myself.
Sure.
But so I guess I had about, so you already had your PhD and then you joined.
So yeah, I actually did something even weirder than that. So in your PhD program, you know, it's usually like 4 or 5 year program. So I was in for the first 2 years. And then you get to a stage where you have to take these huge tests called like your composite exams. And it's kind of like an up or out system, right? Mm-hmm. And then once you pass those, you move into ABD, which is all but dissertation stage, where now you just do research. And what happened is I was 21 or whatever, graduate, and I get right into this PhD program. And if your audience is not familiar with PhD programs, like the first 2 years, it's basically just hazing, right? Mm-hmm. You were like, I was literally, and I wasn't that bright because I hadn't done a master's already. So I was like 15 hours a day just studying finance. And what happened is after that first 2 years, my original plan was to leave the service after college, but I got into this program. And then the gal that ran it, the PhD coordinator, her husband was actually in the Navy. And I'd floated this idea like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about taking a 4-year sabbatical, even though technically we're only allowed 1 year. You know, mm-hmm. you think I get hooked up, and she's like, listen, like, actually, my husband's been in the service for 20 years. Like, I would love to help facilitate this at the University of Chicago here, but you're obviously going to have to get sign off, right? So what I ended up having to go get sign off from my advisors to essentially take a 4-year sabbatical. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got to master's and then left for 4 years, a weird sabbatical in the Marines, and then came back and then finished my dissertation, got the PhD, and you know, so on and so forth. So it's like a mid-range break.
So I have a new empathy for those in the beginning of their finance PhD. It is so rough. You're going to want to join the military instead. That's great though. Do you think it gave you a unique perspective of sorts when you were in, or not really? You kind of,
not really. I mean, it was kind of nice. Cause you know, I'd always been into like hardcore, like PT, and then doing and like trying to also like learn a lot of stuff. And I think, you know, to be good in the service, like everyone thinks like, oh, you're in the military, you must be a dumbass. But the reality is you actually got to be really smart, but more importantly, you got to be able to be intelligent under duress.
Right.
And so that was just something that just, because I used to be an athlete back in the day too, not anymore. Now I'm old and busted, but, and I didn't have a lot of brain power, but those PhD programs, it's more about applying brain power over a long period of time and not giving up.
Right.
And so a lot of these things, I just thought the service was great. You're just learning how to land nav and, you know, do like, you know, ambushes as opposed to, you know, differential equations.
And a huge part of it is just don't give up. Just keep going and you'll get it and you'll start to thrive.
You're grinding,
and figure it out.
Man. That's life.
But also while you were there, you went intel and you started taking notes sort of to kind of explain to your family, like, here's kind of what it's like and everything. And the compilation of those notes became your book Embedded.
Yeah. So it's a little bit more backstory on that. So what happened is, you know, back in the day, and still is, I don't know what it's like now because I've been in the service for a long time, but it is, you know, PTSD and all these things were like big issues. And so they made us come up with something, you know, to avoid this. So we had an option, like either had to write a journal, you had to write letters. I don't even remember, but there's all these things that, you know, the Marines, especially, you just do what you have, what you're trying to do.
It puts the lotion on its skin or it gets the hose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we had to do something to, like, you know, prevent PTSD or whatever. So I was like, all right, fuck it. I'll write a journal. And so that was what I did. And then I end up like I was on one of those embedded training teams, like hanging out with the Iraqis all day. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, writing that journal, and that experience was so anti what I thought going in that it just like changed my mind on a lot of things. That book was more like an inspiration of, hey, like I used to be like, you know, like when I saw Colin Powell show me that little bottle of like nuclear waste, I was like, damn, this is pretty serious. Like we mm-hmm. need to go whoop it on. And then I obviously started interacting and dealing with Iraqis. Yeah. And at the time I could speak Arabic pretty well. So I was like really embedded.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. This is probably not a good use of U.S. resources. Yeah. And my mentality is just not right. And I just need to write this book so other people can at least maybe learn from my little anecdote and have a different perspective on these wars. But that's what it was. It was kind of a weird thing I was asked to do. And then it turned out it was such an interesting experience. And I just had to codify it in a book, basically.
And that's called Embedded. And also, too, where were you? You were in some interesting areas of Iraq when you were...
Yeah, so I was in Haditha in 2006. So we hang out in, like, I don't know if you know, you probably know the area, but, you know, it's out there by the dam where, mm-hmm. you know, ISIS took over. But we were in the Haditha triad. So it was Haditha, Barwana, Haqqaniya, and we just, you know, literally live with the Iraqi battalion and do patrols and... You know, try to avoid getting shot at all the time.
Right, good times.
And prevent
good
them
times.
From you know, shooting themselves in the foot, basically.
But like the PMT teams, essentially, the yeah, mentoring
yeah,
and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they were
okay.
called MIT teams, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it.
We've all seen the jumping jacks videos.
It's yeah, like, yeah, yeah,
I get
exactly.
the general vibe, right? Yeah.
Yep, 100%.
Well, that's great that, you know, you started, you got to do this thing, you kind of roll your eyes at it and you found something that was really helpful in that. And I think I know for me too, it was writing and doing wacky cartoons that describe my experience when I was deployed yeah. in Afghanistan. That yep. was just a dumb thing that now I look back and I'm like, I'm really glad that I did that, that I took my creativity and the things I was feeling and was able to get them out and get them down.
Yeah.
But after that, now, what year did you get out?
So I was in 2004 and I got out in 2008.
Okay.
February. Yep.
Okay. That's right when I was getting in. We just crossed paths.
Yeah. I was in that 2004, 2008 window.
But ever since then, how many years now? Cause we were talking about the March for the Fallen is coming yep. up this month. Yep. How did you get into that? How did this all begin? Cause it's an annual event.
Yeah. So as Marines, you guys will appreciate this. Cause long story short, the reason I got involved is, an Army dude was talking shit about Marines. Mm-hmm. So we were at this, charity event, I don't even know, like 7-8 years ago. And this gentleman named, General Gronsky, who was in civilian gear. I didn't know he was a general. He was mm-hmm. at the table. And, Pat, who's one of my business partners, he's also a former Marine. There's like this old guy and he would start talking trash to us when he found out we were Marines. And he's like, oh yeah, you Marines always think you're like badass and do everything. And we're like, who is this old guy? Like, who is this dude? And then he kind of like challenged us. He's like, yeah, you know, I run this event, National Guard Training Center, you know, it's a 28-mile ruck march. You Marines couldn't do it. And I was like, all right, dude, like, where is your stupid event? And I'll show up and I'll whoop it on just because mm-hmm. I'm tired of listening to you. And then, of course, he then points to this other gentleman at our table. He's like, hey, Captain, can you get these guys the note? And I was like, hey, Captain. And then we learn he's like General Gronsky, the guy that started the thing. And he started this March for the Fallen event where, you know, basically the intent is it's supposed to be direct consumer charity where your charitable contribution is being out there rucking, representing, kind of honoring the fallen, and arguably even more importantly, making sure you show gratitude for Gold Star families because they got to deal with, you know, the pain of these things.
Right.
And so that's how it started. I think I did my first one like 5 or 6 years ago. And then, you know, you guys know, like, misery loves company. So at first it was like 5 of us from the team. And then I started getting other finance geeks and people in like FinServ. And then now the last few years, it's been like, you know, over 100 people that come from around the world at this point. And just random cats and dogs show up and you know, we usually host up there at Fort Eatontown Gap, which is the National Guard training center for PA.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And so it's how many miles again? It's 20.
It's 28 miles.
Is there any significance to the distance?
No. So I asked General Gronsky. It's named after the 28th Infantry Division.
Ah, okay.
It was like a unit he was in, and it was like long enough where it's beyond a marathon because he wanted it to be like hard. And then you're supposed to ruck with a minimum rucksack of 35 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people can't do that. So the real idea is just to represent, but the right. goal is to do the 28 miles with the 35 pound minimum size ruck.
Very cool. And like you said, your finance buddies are coming along. You don't have to be a veteran. You don't have to be military. You want to show love for the military, Gold Star families. Come on out to this event. And this year, because of COVID, it's in smaller groups around the country. So you could pretty much do it anywhere.
Yeah. So because of COVID, obviously they couldn't do the event. It's just too risky. Mm-hmm. So we created MFTF virtual, and we have like 30 team leads now around the nation. It's very centric on financial services because that's all the people I know. Mm-hmm. So obviously you're more than happy to join these groups. It's just you may be hanging around like finance geeks. So
everyone does the march in loafers, actually. Yeah.
But you'd be surprised. Like we attract there's a lot of people in financial services that are actually former veterans, and they're not like total like foo-foo types. And we've obviously kind of pulled all them out of the woodwork. So it's a great opportunity. And then if you want to do it on our website, alphaarchitect.com/MFTF, if you just go there, what I have is I have a database of all the March for the Fallens across the nation and like a team lead. And then there's a map of the course and a link to their Twitter feed where they laundry list the details. And mm-hmm. So if you want to tag on an event, just show up or just DM them on Twitter or try to get in touch with them or reach out to me. And that's the idea. So the idea is we just kind of decentralize command of it.
Uh-huh.
It with the small groups, people can kind of adapt to the COVID environment that they face, but we can still accomplish the mission.
I'm going to show up and use those 28 miles to get free finance advice. I'm going to just chat people up. You're giving me an idea.
Yeah,
New York
City is actually going to be a good one. There's some heavy hitters showing up to that one.
Noted.
Yeah, there's, the team leads there is Josh Russell. He's ex-PhD, Bill Sweetle, Army vet, and then Cliff Azens, who's like super famous person in our business, is representing too. And there's a, you know, slew of folks. So you can go out there and whoop it on.
All right. Represent. Well, for those listening, we'll definitely put the link in the podcast episode, so check that out. And also, final question, Kyle was telling me you do a great deal of work helping veterans get into finance and get hired and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for, because I look at this and going to all these job fairs as enlisted, and I had this attitude when I first got out, well, all that stuff's for officers. I could never make it in that world. Do you have any advice for the enlisted looking at this and feeling intimidated?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's all this stuff is intimidating, but like anything in life, just get after it, make it happen. Mm-hmm. So the number one thing you want to do, if you're not coming at it from like the officer ranks where like the network structures are just obviously highly in our favor, even though people don't want to admit that, it's just, you got to network your ass off. Right. So one thing I would do is show up to March for the Fallen event.
I was just going to say, what a great idea. You're saying each one's probably going to have heavy hitters there and people you want to talk to.
You'll be talking to CEOs and people that, you know, deal in this world. So just always be networking. And those events are also great too, at least for me, because I use them almost like as like recruiting or not recruiting, but like testing, right? Because I don't really care about how like smart you are. I care about kind of like how tough you are and like how well you can grind and deal with adversity. And what better way to test someone's grit than like some crazy 28 mile ruck march, right?
Exactly.
So that's just me. I'm HR, but you know, I probably don't do it the right way. but I'd say just network the heck out of things. And then obviously reach out to me or just anyone on Twitter. There's actually a pretty big, community of veterans in finance. And also if you actually will dedicate to read the books and put the time in. If you just send me an email, I'll just mail you some of my geeky like finance books, you know, for free. So just like I'm basically ready and willing and on standby to help anyone who actually wants to put the work in to get into the space. But obviously I can't provide the work. I can only provide the support, but I think I'm happy to do that.
So many people feel intimidated and they don't realize that there are so many veterans out there who I don't care what your background is, officer, enlisted, where you're at in your degree, you're a veteran, like who want to help, who want to mentor, who want to help guide people. So many out there. So I think my advice would be, don't be afraid to reach out. When I first got out, one of the biggest helps to me was, it was the ACP program, I think it's called, but they linked me up with a mentor who he wasn't even military himself, but was just so many people out there willing to help you get a leg up and get kickstarted on things. So whatever avenue you're going down, whether it's finance or whatever, don't be afraid to ask for help and look for people like you who are doing great things.
Yeah. And one of the things I would do, and you know, being an officer, this is like the trick that all the enlisted people know, is they basically teach you. They're like, listen, confidence is everything.
Yes.
You're never going to actually know what the hell's going on, especially as a lieutenant. But you just got to pretend like you do, right? Because in the end, people will just follow people that believe and have confidence. And obviously, you got to have some sort of competence too. But same thing, like even if you don't feel you belong, just fake it till you make it, because someone else will, right?
Absolutely.
So just get in there and you may not know it all, but just go for it. And just be confident and do something. Like some action is better than none.
So shoulders back, have a clipboard in your hand and you can go anywhere. Really? You can bust through anything.
Yeah, exactly. And I just watch like moto videos, right? It sounds stupid, but like, you know, I follow like David Goggins, Jocko, and I'm big into like ultra endurance racing. And there's this gal named Courtney DeWalter. Mm-hmm. And like, I just always listen to their like tweets and like, they're not even talking about, but it's just like, man, these people can do anything. I can go get a job in finance. That's not even hard compared to like these people do. So just kind of find people that motivate you to go run through a brick wall. And then anything that's not running through a brick wall will be pretty easy.
I'm looking for holes in the brick wall behind you right now to see if anyone's gone through there yet. Have you do ultra marathon racing? Have you done any yourself?
Yeah, I did the Leadville 100 last year, which is like a 100-mile race in Leadville, Colorado. And I'm not doing that ever again.
What was that like? What was that experience like?
Pretty much terrible. I mean, I finished, but what I would say is it's an amazing, it's like being in the Marines or something, right? Like at the time, you're like, this was the dumbest idea.
So towards the end of the interview, the audio cut out a little bit, but we did close it out talking about mentorship and networking. Because again, I was saying to him, I feel like sometimes it's skewed in favor, things are skewed in favor of the officers. They talk about, all these companies talk about hiring veterans and these great jobs. And usually they're talking about officers and people who already have these great degrees and experience and this and that. And he said, you know, whether you're enlisted, no matter where you went to school, one of the most important parts.
Did he mention UTSA specifically?
He did. He mentioned UTSA, but it's networking and forming a mentor.
The Harvard of West Texas.
But networking and forming mentorship and finding somebody to mentor you. And he said, it doesn't matter where you come from. He opened up his own personal. He's like, here's my email. Tell any single one of your listeners, if they're interested in finance or they're looking for a mentor or something, hit me up. I will help you. There's so many people out there who just want to help veterans. And so don't tell yourself you can't do it or that you're not good enough or that, well, I was enlisted or I was this. There is somebody out there who's reaching their hand to shake your hand and help you out with something. So don't be afraid to seek that. People want to help. So I don't know. It was a big takeaway for me.
It's so important to remember, right? You're not the first person to make this transition. Mm-hmm. So many have walked in your shoes before. So definitely find someone. I've talked about it before. It was so important to me that I had good people in my life that were able to kind of shepherd me along that way. And now, just to your point, Kate, I love when people DM me and they say, hey, I'm transitioning. I have these questions. And I always say, shoot me an email. I will take the time and I will answer any and all questions that you'll give me. And it's not just I'm not going to pat myself on the back here, but I will give you more than just like a one sentence answer too. So if you have questions, my email and my DMs are always open. I'm happy to help.
So we're done. Another thing too, like this March for the Fallen, and there's other veteran events in your community, volunteer events, and the Team Red, White, and Blue. And you might think, I don't want to just stay with all this veteran stuff all the time. But it's such a great way to network and to, hey, you know, guys, mm-hmm. I'm looking for a job, blah, blah, blah. Immediately, officer enlisted, whatever, people are going to be like, oh, well, let me put my feelers out there for you and let's hook you up. So definitely, you know, try and stay involved with stuff is some advice I would give for veterans getting out. But really, really impressive person. Thankful to him for coming on the show.
You know, he's not going to have a difficult time getting an interview. It's going to be Sergeant Major Payne. He is the subject of round number 5, and we're going to talk a little bit about some Medal of Honor stuff here. And these videos now. So I posted a blog this morning. We're recording on Thursday, and this video came across the AP wire of an actual helmet cam of what happened whenever Sergeant Major Payne earned the Medal of Honor. I legitimately think now that we have the ability to wear body cams and helmet cams and all that stuff, it is going to completely change the way the award system works and how people view these actions, because we've mm-hmm. talked about it before. If you have a video of something, it slaps so different than whenever you don't yeah. have the video yeah. of it. You can read it all damn day, but imagine if you could go back to 1945 or 1943 and you could see Woody Williams on the sands of Iwo Jima shooting a flamethrower at a bunch of folks to try to get these pillboxes under control. You could do that with Tech Sergeant Chapman's video, and now with this one. You could see what happened. You could hear the gunshots going on, the absolute chaos, and still have the clarity of mind. I know this is an auditory podcast, but I want people to hear the audio and hear the chaos just for like 20, 30 seconds about what it would sound like in this situation. So that's kind of what you hear. Kate, walk us through what's going on with the Medal of Honor stuff.
Right. So an American soldier helped rescue about 70 hostages set to be executed by ISIS in Iraq, and he has been approved to receive the Medal of Honor for his actions during that 2015 raid.
It's crazy that it was Major, 2015. You should yeah. see the video and be like, okay, here you go.
Immediate. Sergeant Major Thomas Patrick Payne, a Ranger assigned to the U.S. Army Special Ops Command, will receive the honor for valor on the anniversary of the September 11th attacks at the White House. The medal will honor Payne's actions in a daring pre-dawn raid on October 22nd, 2015. Seeking to rescue 70 ISIS hostages, American and Kurdish commandos flew in Chinook helicopters to the town of Huija. The Kurdish regional national government, The Kurdish regional government had received a tip that the 70 prisoners, including Peshmerga fighters, the Kurdish forces, this is so hard to read. Basically, it's okay. The Kurdish regional government had a tip that there were 70 prisoners, including their own fighters, who would soon be massacred by ISIS. Aerial photos of the compound showed what intel officials believed to be freshly dug mass graves where their bodies would be dumped. So the plan called for members of the American unit to just support the Kurdish commandos as they went in to save these guys, but it didn't work out that way. Time was of the essence. The raid began with a failure when Kurdish forces attempted to make a dynamic entry, but the hole they blasted failed and alerted the ISIS.
Been there,
the
dude.
ISIS Moja.
I have been there. Yeah. That shit sucks.
So all of a sudden, this supposed to be smooth operation, instead it's just like a giant alarm to the ISIS militants. Hey, we're here, and all hell broke loose. You can hear an incredible amount of gunfire, which we could play again in a second, a little bit of that. But Payne and his unit climbed over a wall and entered the prison compound. So basically, once all hell broke loose, they were only supposed to be on the outside of support. Split second decision, we're going in. So Payne and his unit are climbing over a wall. They're entering the prison compound. The soldiers quickly cleared one of the two buildings known to house the hostages. And once inside, heavy enemy resistance. The team used bolt cutters to break the locks off the prison doors, freeing nearly 40 hostages. And you have to imagine, it's dark out, it's a pre-dawn raid. There are hostages who have no idea what's going on. Mm-hmm. There's gunfire, there's smoke. 40 people getting unlocked. Where do they run? What do they do? So it is a lot of wheels in motion. Moments later...
Can I just make one point with that too, Kate?
Sure.
They don't speak English either. Right. So you can't just say like, hey, follow me, come this way.
Yep.
It's just noise.
Yep.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. It's absolute chaos. And moments later, an urgent call over the radio was received from the other task force that other members were stuck in an intense gunfight in the second building. And now between 10 to 20 Army soldiers, including Payne and Master Sergeant Joshua L. Wheeler, maneuvered towards that second building that Payne said was heavily fortified and partially on fire. So now heavy smoke, too. The Kurdish commandos are pinned down by gunfire there. And at some point in his attempt to rescue the Kurdish forces, Wheeler was shot and killed. He was the first American killed in action since the U.S. launched renewed military intervention in Iraq against ISIS in 2014. 20 ISIS fighters were also killed in the operation. So also during this time, the team is scaling ladders onto the roof of these buildings. There's machine gun fire below. From the rooftop, commandos are engaged with the enemy, hand grenades, small arms fire. At this point, ISIS fighters are detonating suicide vests. This is like a last fucking stand. We're going mm-hmm. down with the ship. The roof is shaking. So Payne moves to another fortified door. He cuts the first lock, but heavy smoke's coming through. He can't breathe. He runs back out, hands the bolt cutters to an Iraqi counterpart. He goes back in and continues cutting locks and saving people, 30 more hostages out of that building. And finally, he runs back in to get one last hostage who was scared, too scared to move. He runs back into all this hell to do that. He entered two more times, absolute chaos. But yeah, so absolutely he deserves it above and beyond. Put his life on the line, looking out for his fellow soldiers, for Iraqi and Kurdish soldiers, and for hostages. I mean, 70 people.
And that story is one that happened in 2015, and it's obviously insane. And last week, Defense Secretary Mark Esper endorsed awarding the Medal of Honor to a soldier who sustained fatal burns while acting to save fellow soldiers in Iraq in 2005. Army Sergeant First Class Alwin Cash of Florida previously received the Silver Stars for his action, but luckily... those are going to be finally bumped up. Cash's story has been all over the military. Anyone who knows about the military and follows it closely knows this story and has been saying, come on, man, just fucking, this guy deserves it. Like, what else do you have to do? You give your life in service of others, trying to save others, knowing most likely you're going to die, and you get a Silver Star. You should receive the Medal of Honor. And finally, a Secretary of Defense is endorsing Arwin Cash for that. And what I think is incredible about this is imagine the pride of his son, who's currently serving as well, and knowing that people all across the Army, all across the military, all across the landscape of America know your dad had so much valor that they're like, let's change one of the names of the bases. This guy from actions in 2005, even though our history is so rich, he deserves to have a major military base named after him.
And just to tell that story, I mean, a roadside bomb was detonated in Iraq back in 2005, and he went back in. His clothes were soaked in gasoline, and he went back into this burning vehicle and pulled. He saved several people's lives, and again, he went back in, pulling soldiers from the burning vehicle. And he died November 8th of that year in San Antonio, Texas, mm-hmm. at one of the bases there. But to do that, to know the pain of, if you've even just touched some of that, and for him to just keep going back to save people, and probably knowing that he was gonna die, mm-hmm. I mean, that is Medal of Honor.
He was on fire when he was saving these people.
Right, he was on fire.
He was on fire himself.
And he would be the first Black service member honored with the distinction of the Medal of Honor for actions in Iraq and Afghanistan. Definitely way overdue, a big deal. And his son is PFC Andrew Cash, who just recently, just this past July, graduated from Fort Benning. And definitely his mom is the biggest supporter.
And that
is... his family's behind him, yeah.
I mean, that decision is tough because you see... when anybody joins, you know what could happen. But you never really put yourself in that position. Like, all three of us went knowing it was after September 11th, or all four of us. We all went knowing that it was going to be you're going to war, most likely. But I would venture to say we didn't have a real vision of what it would be like. I didn't know very many people who had gone. I didn't know anybody who was injured in these wars. You go when not just somebody that you know, but your dad dies. And your dad dies in such a horrific way where you saw it at Fort Houston. It's another thing if your dad dies or your mom dies while they're in combat overseas and you don't see what happens. You see the real life aftermath of what happened and still say, you know what? I'm going to put my fucking name on the line.
Yeah. He was 8 years old when that happened. So pretty impressive.
I mean, both of these stories, you don't really even need to add much to them just because they speak volumes all by themselves, just the story of themselves. And both of these men are very well deserving of this honor, and it's just great that they're both going to receive it.
And before we move on, I want to make one point that I made in the blog as well. I think that we hear these stories, and Sergeant Major Payne, his nephew actually reached out to me and said it's kind of strange hearing about my uncle out here, because we had to act like he didn't exist. Like, we didn't know, we weren't allowed to talk about him, we weren't allowed to do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. There's no pictures of him, there's none of this shit, and now he's all over the news. And I think that we hear stories like that and we only put the courageous aspects out there. You do not receive the Medal of Honor unless you see, do, or experience something absolutely horrific. We look at the blue and the gold around somebody's neck and we think that this is a beautiful thing. It's a story of courage. Dakota, Kyle, so many others have said to me, that was the worst day of my life. And now because I have the medal, I'm almost required to talk about the worst day of my life every day for the rest of my life. And we don't think about that enough. So it's something that Sergeant Major Payne and his family know, that that's probably something that, if it doesn't haunt him, it might. I hope it doesn't, but I'm hope it's something that he can move on from and get a little bit of closure here as well.
Yeah, it really is a burden, honestly. I mean, for as honorable as it is to receive this award, it is a burden to have to relive that terrible day over and over again. And I only hope that that they can be strong and be okay with doing that.
But very, very inspiring to see that all around, like, you know, it's rare, but there's Americans out there willing to do that stuff for fellow Americans. And there's so many incredible people. I know on the show, we roast the military for a lot of different things. But again, we realize there are so many incredible people serving out there doing such amazing and difficult and inspiring things. So just no a doubt. Big shout out as we head into Labor Day weekend that, you know, thanks to everybody who's out there grinding, man, who's out there putting in the work and doing all the tough stuff while I sit on my ass by a pool this weekend.
And while we are going to Labor Day, we always think about what we're going to be doing on the holidays because we're out now. But there are still people who are going through school who are going to have curfews. They're not going to be able to do anything. One of the best examples of what happens is this gunnery sergeant who's in Oceanside, California. And he, in 2002, let his Marines know that if you come back late, he might have to punch you in your fucking bitch-ass mouth. So if you're late coming back to the pod on Tuesday, the same thing might happen to you. Here's the words from the gunny.
I'm telling you, you don't know me by now. I ain't changed shit. Come back across that goddamn broad lake, I'll punch you dead in your mouth. Last time, I'll reel on, punch you dead in your fucking mouth. And goddamn, the NCOs was the one fucking up last time, not the goddamn Lance Corporal. You told to be back at a certain time, bring your punk ass here. Are you setting the goddamn policy for every fucking body else? You know it's 2300, come back at least 15 minutes prior. Nothing changing. I don't give a fuck what you've been drinking. I really don't give a fuck. All I'm gonna do is tell me to retire and get paid at the highest rank. So you bring your punk ass across that goddamn broad lake. Come across there. Try me. I'm not playing with it. I'm a grown fucking man. Be here when you're told to be here. Don't come trot down through that damn fucking lake. They trying to hear it. Good damn limbo point. I've been here before. You're gonna enjoy yourself. Get out there, have a good goddamn time.
Now that dude is a gunner sergeant.
That's a salty ass.
If you drew up a gunnery sergeant in the Marines in a lab, that's exactly who you'd
get. One of the comments whenever I blogged that was, do all branches of the military cuss like that, or is that just something that Marines do? And I commented, like, did he cuss? I didn't even notice that he did.
Yeah, didn't even notice. Yeah. Truly.
That is true talk. He has huge biceps, just an unbelievable person. We're actually going to talk to somebody who you all might know if you follow the military closely, Nate Fick, who actually served with that gunnery sergeant as well as all the Marines who were in Generation Kill. Nathaniel Fick was the first lieutenant that was in charge of the fire team and in charge of the platoon of reconnaissance Marines that went on to make the famous movie and the famous book that was Generation Kill. And Nate Fick actually wrote One Bullet Away, which is an amazing book on leadership and his experiences in Iraq as well. We're going to do all that. It's going to be a fun couple weeks coming up. We got some really, really good guests that you're all going to enjoy. But for now, we're going to move into Save Rounds Alibis. Kyle, we'll start with you.
So got two real quick. The lieutenant, TikTok lieutenant, the fact people can't see the problem that someone in the military that's in charge of people is making light of a genocide committed against millions of people, perpetrated by the military, the Nazis, mm-hmm. is shocking to me. And two, yeah. we're getting a lot of pictures of quarantine meals from around the military. Food in the food in the military sucks. It just sucks. But goddamn. I mean, getting locked down
it
for 2 weeks.
It might be worse now. Like, some of it's yeah. just really,
it looks
really
horrendous.
Bad.
It looks horrendous.
You know,
keep
it,
them coming.
You know it's a struggle meal? There's one dead giveaway if it's a struggle meal when they're trying to make it nice. Crinkly carrots. Yeah. If there's crinkly carrots, get it out of my face.
Yes.
Just a little color, just to spice it up. But I did get two pictures from one in the Navy, one in the Air Force. And they're like, yeah, our quarantine meals were fucking great. Look at this. We have bone-in chicken wings, not boneless.
Mm. Whoa!
And then the Air Force, which just, God. I mean, Kate, you remember the Chow Hall of Manus?
Beautiful. Candy bars, king size.
Yeah, you get to walk
all right,
out
Kate,
with
what do you got?
I got nothing. Going to be out on Long Island this weekend.
I think it's on Long Island.
I'm going to be all over. I'm going to be scooting across Long Island this weekend.
I'm going to be prepositioning around.
Yeah, but that's about it. Yeah, no, just swimming and going in the Long Island Sound and floating around like I love to do. So that's it.
There you go. Cons?
Yeah, if you're defending that second lieutenant, I want to have a conversation with you because in no way should you be defending that guy. Anyway, does this count as qualifying for longtime Thule's? I did some sewing last night. We
yes.
have some pillows.
Yeah, we'll allow it.
We have some we have some pillows that ripped open, so I had to sew them back to ensure all the insides didn't come out, so I did some sewing. So that was
you
fun.
You won't put those pictures on there and let us critique your stitches, you coward.
You know, all right. In the military, guys would always rip the crotch of their cami pants. Uh-huh. And they'd bring them to me, like, "Hey, Kate, can you fix this?" Like, because I'm a woman, I would know how to.
42.
I know.
No offense,
but of course,
Kate,
I'd always be like,
"Turning butter for a minute, so you can sew yeah. my camis together."
No offense, Kate, but you might be the last female in my life that I know
yeah,
that
seriously.
I would bring something to get sewed.
Right,
Kate? Yeah. I don't know that I'd bring
no,
any
Kate's
problem
artistic.
To you.
I think if she looked at it in an artistic
yeah, that's
way,
true.
She could do it. She's a good painter and things like that. That's
Thank
one skill
you.
That she definitely she has an artistic brain, so I think she can make it beautiful.
She,
now your camis might
a
come back
little patch.
With a nice little color pattern in the crotch just to spice yeah. it up yeah. a little bit. That's fine.
Neon pink crotch.
I got to give a shout-out, congratulations, my battle buddy Rob, who's been on the show before. He got engaged last weekend, so shout-out to Rob. And then finally, Army football. We got our first game this weekend, Middle Tennessee State University. And I want to give a special credit because going through this COVID and college football and will we play, will we not play, I think we saw a lot of conferences that seemed devoid of leadership. So I just want to give a special shout out to the leadership at Army that seemed to have their shit together from the get-go, from March, to ensure that we had a season. So our athletic director, Mr. Mike Buddy, Mr. Rob Beretta, the associate athletic director, and Lieutenant General Williams, all of those men among many of others at the Army Athletic Department working together to ensure that we had a season, 12-game season.
That being said, it is a lot easier when you can threaten the students with not only with administrative action and not just push-ups.
Yeah. This is also true. Yeah, yeah. They definitely had some advantages yeah. to get make sure this season
you can't
was,
go anywhere. Yes, I can. No, you actually can't, bitch. How about that?
You actually can't. Oh, and then finally, Finally, I got to give a shout out to Kyle.
Oh, no.
Kyle, buddy. No, I'm telling you, man. You on Twitter, it's just so great. You're really embracing that salty old vet.
He's an artist.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't think
it has.
I think he's just fed up. I think he's just tired.
I'm telling you guys,
it's like
some
I'm
of
just
this
gonna
shit.
Let it fly.
Yeah, thanks though. I just hate how people are on Twitter. So,
all right.
So that's all.
Mine
I got.
Is I'm having.
Oh,
a,
and, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh
I'm sorry.
My
I'm
god!
Sorry.
God. Five save rounds. No, you're
one more thing.
You just went on Labor Day. Five save rounds.
Yeah, we're all trying to go into Labor Day weekend, and you're that guy. Oh, my God.
One more thing, Staff Sergeant. This weekend, to you three and to everybody listening, just remember, don't be stupid. That's all I got.
Safe sex is great sex. You better wear latex because you don't want that latex that I think I'm latex. So wrap it up. She's so sweet that I'd rather lift the wrapper. Sound the retreat.